Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everybody, how you day? It's your boy Ty Roxon, and we're back again with another episode. Today we're talking to the legendary Kaleem DeBase, who's got an amazing column in Inc. You should definitely check that out. That will be in the show notes. But what we're discussing today is her new book, Start a Successful Business: Expert Advice to Take Your Startup from Idea to Empire. And we break down every single stage in launching a business. What to do when you have an idea, how to test it out, how to go into the market, how to think like your customer, and then how to build a team, and then what to do about funding. And it's a really, really layered podcast interview because she's so forthcoming with information, and she's got a fascinating background as well. So any of you who is thinking of starting a business, I hope you glean and you take in every single bit of information and you share this as well. Couldn't think of a better way to start the week. And as always, reach out to me if you have any questions. Enjoy.
In a world where very few people embrace their global identity and seek to understand their neighbors, cross-cultural expert Tayo Roxon is on a mission to bridge this divide. Each week, he'll open your mind with insights from some of the global minds in the world. Get ready, take some notes, and learn how to be the best you that you can be.
Welcome everybody to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's episode is with the amazing Kaleem DeBase. She's a contributing editor at Inc.com, and she has spent the bulk of her career covering entrepreneurship, primarily as a small business editor of the Wall Street Journal, and later a contributor of the New York Times, and now she's the author of this amazing book, which is about taking your idea to a massive empire, starting a successful business. And she gives you expert advice on how to take that startup or that idea you've had in the shower into something that actually makes movement. So I'm pretty excited to have her on the show. Welcome to the show, Kaleem.
Hey, it's so nice to be here.
The pleasure is mine. And before I even start to geek out and nerd out about the whole concept of business and what it means to do in the 21st century, give us some insight as to who Kaleem is. What were the early years of your life, and when did you come to that? Yeah, this is good. I like that you laughed already.
Oh no!
How did you?
You're throwing tough questions at me already. Oh no!
I just wanted to peel back some layers. How did you go from early Kaleem, young Kaleem, to that turning point in your life when you realized this is what I need to do?
Oh, that's funny. Well, you were just talking about geeky, nerdy, I think you said, and that's kind of how I would describe my early formative years. I was definitely a bookworm, and I still am a bookworm. In school, I was one of those students that I feel like I always had my nose in a book, and I was a really good student. I probably didn't have the social skills that came later in life, but since I liked reading so much, I also liked writing, and so I knew pretty early on, when I was maybe, you know, as young as 14, 15, I knew that I wanted to be a writer, and I wasn't sure what to do with that. And I remember talking to like a guidance counselor or something like that in high school, and they really advised me to pursue a career in journalism. which is not something I had thought of. I was pretty shy, and the thought of going up to people and asking them questions really intimidated me. And I decided to start, but I really wanted to be a writer, so I decided to pursue that. And I started writing for my high school newspaper, and really loved it. And from there, went to college and pursued a degree in writing, and worked for my college newspaper, and did tons of internships with different news organizations, and eventually pursued a graduate degree in journalism. And I had a goal of working for the big publications, and I wound up at the Wall Street Journal in New York City. And it took me a long time to get there, but I did, and I had a great time doing it. And then a couple years ago, I wanted to take a step back, and I wanted to pursue sort of things on my own schedule, and I wanted to kind of be my own boss, I guess you could say. So I decided to become basically a freelance journalist, and so now I write for a variety of publications. I'm a contributing editor at Inc. magazine, and that's who I wrote this book for, Start a Successful Business. And then I also, and this is really meaningful work for me, I do a lot of work for a nonprofit media company called The Story Exchange, which focuses on female entrepreneurs. And we really try to shine a spotlight on the really cool women out there who are starting businesses and creating jobs and providing for their families and giving back to their communities. And sometimes they don't get the media attention, so we're trying to shine a spotlight on them. So that's the quick summary of who I am.
That's unbelievable, and I love the fact that you knew early on that you were going to be or some sort of creative, a writer, and or some sort of journalist, essentially.
Yeah, it's really a gift to know what you want to do early on in life. I feel very fortunate about that, because I have witnessed friends and family, struggle to figure out what they want to do career wise, and for me, I've known for decades now what I wanted to do, and it's really been a great help for me to know that I had clarity early on, basically.
Well, now I want to flip that to the person that doesn't know what they want to do or doesn't have that clarity. Do you have any tips for basically weeding through that?
Ah, that's a good one. Well, I get into that in my book a little bit in the very first chapter, which is about how to go about starting a business and coming up with your brilliant business idea.
Yep.
And I think basically how you approach that would be how you approach anything you're trying to figure out in life. And what I had done for the book is I took a step back and I looked at all of these super successful entrepreneurs that we've interviewed at Inc. magazine over the years, and I tried to find some common denominators, that could help others. And one thing that I found was that many successful entrepreneurs started a business because they had some personal pain point or frustration that they themselves were trying to solve. And I think that is a cue for anyone who is, trying to figure something out, is what is that? What are you bothered by? What is something that you really want to see that you don't feel is out there yet? In terms of starting a business, that is a great foundation, because when you are trying to create a product or service for yourself, then you're highly motivated to get that product or service on store shelves or manufactured or, in people's hands, whatever you need to do. And also, if you want to see, if you're struggling and you want this product or service on the market because you think it will help you in some fashion, then there are probably other people who feel the same way, and they're called your future customers. A great example that I like to use, because it's a fun one, is Sarah Blakely, who is a well-known female entrepreneur. Many years ago, she tried on a pair of white pants, and she did not like how she looked in those pants, and she invented a product, an undergarment. It's called Spanx. But she invented that. She got it manufactured. She put it on the market. She found a lot of other women wanted to buy the same product, and she's now a billionaire. And that, there's probably a lot of different things she did along the way, but the very simple story of how her, you know, empire started was that she had this personal pain point or frustration, and she took it and she figured out a solution, and then she decided other people wanted that, and she put it on the market.
That's, you know, Sarah Blake is always such a great example. I was just watching her on Shark Tank, actually.
Yeah.
And I've read a lot about her, and
she's cool.
Yeah, she is. She's not your typical type of billionaire. Not that I know any of these billionaires, but whenever you hear them talk, she does come at that the same. She says it a lot. She says, you know, I just really started with this problem that I had.
Yep.
And I felt like a lot of women did that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I have conversations with a lot of entrepreneurs, and a lot of times I think they've somehow convinced themselves that they don't, that the problem they have is not big enough for anyone else to solve. And so they don't dive into that a lot. Do you ever see that imposter syndrome playing out?
Oh, imposter syndrome. Oh, that's a great term. Do they think that I think so. You know, I think that happens with everyone. I think it's a natural feeling. One of the things in terms of coming up with, you know, once you have an idea, but you're not sure about it, the next thing you can do is to test it out. I mean, that's what I would advise anyone who maybe has that idea, but they're like, I don't know if anyone really would want this. I mean, the next logical thing to do is test it out. And, you know, there are some people who don't like to talk to anyone. Once they have an idea, they're afraid someone else might steal it, or that, you know, they just don't want anyone else to know about it. Maybe because they don't have confidence in it. But I think, and this is, again, when I sat down to write the book, I looked at what the successful entrepreneurs did. And one of the commonalities was that all of them just talked to anyone who would listen about their great idea. And I would highly advise that, because then you can figure it out if there really is, a demand for it, if there might be a market. You know, start with friends and family, get their opinions, and then from there, you know, talk to potential customers, you know, do some surveying, have a focus group. Look at people in the industry or related industry, try to get meetings with them. Basically, just get out there and talk to people. And that, you know, that doesn't require you quitting your day job or anything like that, but it's just start talking about it and see what people are saying and use that feedback, because, you know, maybe it's a really good idea, but maybe it needs a few tweaks, and you can start tweaking it once you get some of that initial feedback. So for anyone who has that sort of lack of confidence or that feeling, that imposter syndrome, I would say just keep talking about your idea and take all of the good advice you're getting and feedback and start working on it. And then you'll feel more confident that you have something that will work in the marketplace.
Awesome. Awesome. So now we talked about how to come up with that brilliant business idea that like you like to say. So how do you go about selecting the best strategy and structure for this startup?
Yeah. So that's a good question, because the way people start businesses has really changed a lot over the years, in large part because of technology and because of the way consumers are now, which is maybe different than, say, 20 years ago. Everything is sort of speeded up quite a bit. I would say some years ago, if you were thinking about starting a business, you would do a whole series of things before you even put your product on the market. You would sit down and you would write a formal business plan, and you would do a lot of research, and you would do maybe development. You would spend a lot of time before even opening your doors. And while that is there's a lot of that's not a bad idea, the more common approach now is what we're seeing. It's a method called the Lean Startup Method, and this is something that was popularized in a book a few years back by an author named Eric Ries. And the Lean Startup Method is basically when you have that brilliant business idea, you take basically a very bare bones version of this idea and you put it out on the market. And it's basically to do sort of what I was just talking about in terms of getting feedback. It's you're going live with your idea and seeing how customers are responding, what the market is saying about it, and then you're making tweaks and you're evolving it in real time. So that's sort of what, in terms of strategy, that's what, especially at Inc., what when we talk to entrepreneurs and when our reporters interview people who are starting businesses, a lot of them are taking that approach, which is to just get going and to get started and to have what's called something called a minimum viable product out there, and you know, to make tweaks and to evolve and to pivot along the way. One of the other things I noticed with the super successful entrepreneurs is that the company that they end up with sometimes looks very different than how they started. And some good examples of that would be like Amazon, for instance. When Jeff Bezos started it, it was an online bookseller. And of course, it still is an online bookseller, but now it sells everything else in the world. So, you know, that's a company that has changed quite dramatically from how it first started out. And another good example is Netflix, which, you know, started out as a DVD rental service. And of course, you know, people don't even have DVDs really anymore. And now it's more, you know, something like a Hollywood studio almost. Right. But yeah, so, you know, a lot of this is driven by how the speed at which consumers sort of taste change and the way we access products and services is very different than in years past. And there is a need to kind of move quickly at times. So that's why starting lean in that fashion is what I would recommend.
Yeah. Now, so with the structure, you're saying lean it down to the bare bones.
Yep.
Understand that there's going to be flexibility, most likely due to the fast moving markets.
Yep.
And I guess my question then is, it's twofold. As you're building a team, how do you make sure you build a team that's able to deal with this change? Because your teammates, this is as much, yeah, this is like a marriage. I've never been married, but I've been told it's like a marriage, right? And how do you get them to, you know, move with the tide that's going?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. And that's, you know, as you start to grow and as you start to, you know, hire employees, things like that, that gets to your company culture, what you want in your workplace. And I think as a leader, you need to have really good communication skills. You need to explain to people what it's like working at your company. And you need to be able to do that in a clear way. And you need to know it yourself, what it's like. And I think especially if you have a startup, you probably need to hire people who are very comfortable wearing a lot of hats and doing a lot of things. And, you know, some people know that that's not their strength. And I think the more you can communicate what your culture is like in your company, then you can get people who are drawn to that culture and want to come work for you and will be happy and will stay with you as you grow.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very important. I think your team structure is one of the things that you really should pay attention to. You can't go about that way, you know, you can't go about it in a half, you know, I don't want to say the word, can't half-ass it, essentially. That's what I was trying to avoid.
Way, yeah.
And then I was like, I was trying to censor myself, and I was like, oh, it's my podcast. So that's one strategy. So in terms of structure, are there different types of business structures? Are they flat? Are they layered? Are they, you know, I'm just curious about, I know you mentioned Amazon, you mentioned Netflix, but in the digital age, there's, you know, sometimes there aren't even physical offices. You've got Uber, you've got Airbnb, you've got all these new types of collaborative type of economies that are spawning businesses. So I'm curious if you've seen a trend there as well.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, there's been a significant number of tools that have been developed that allow people to work remotely from any place. There's communication tools like Slack is a great example. A lot of offices will use that to be able to communicate with employees wherever they might be. And there's a whole slew of others that allow people to work remotely. And I think that's definitely a trend we've seen. And, you know, we see more and more startups, companies starting that don't really need to have office space, for quite a long time, because, you know, there are these tools that allow people to work from any place. And that's, I think that is a great way for a company to start lean, in that you can use tools like that to kind of unite your partners, your team, and, you know, any employees you have, and you don't have to make that capital outlay to have a big office space or anything like that. Yeah. So that's definitely an area where technology has been our friend.
For sure. No, absolutely. Let's move on to the one of the most difficult parts about businesses is funding.
Yeah.
How do you figure out funding?
Yeah. Well, so with funding, that's always the tricky part with a business. And, you know, there are all sorts of statistics, if you look at them, that will show a pretty high rate of small business failure. It's very difficult for some businesses to make it past the first couple of years. And that's usually because the business is undercapitalized, which is just a fancy way of saying it doesn't have enough funding. That's always been a pain point, I guess you could say, with any small business. In terms of where to find the money to start your business, that hasn't changed too much over the years. But the number one spot to find money to start your business is basically your own pocket. So what you bring to the table will be the first place you look. So your own bank account, your own savings, your own paycheck if you still have a corporate job maybe that you haven't quit, or maybe you have a part-time job that will provide some income.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, you know, your personal nest egg is the first place in terms of where to find funding for your small business. The next place would be friends and family. And that is, sometimes the money that friends and family will provide an entrepreneur is, I've heard it called love money, because only people who love you will be willing to give you that money, because it's really, you know, when you're in the early stages of starting a business, not many big institutions will take a chance on you. For instance, it will be very difficult for you to get a bank loan or even an SBA loan, because you don't have a track record yet, and a bank doesn't want, you know, a bank is only going to give you money if they can expect a return. So those early days of starting a business, it really, you have to look at your own resources, friends and family. Some people tap into credit cards. From a personal finance standpoint, I don't recommend doing that, but some people do. They also tap into retirement savings or home equity loans. all of these are big decisions that really have to be thought of carefully, but they are sources of money for some entrepreneurs. In more recent years, we've seen crowdfunding become a popular way to fund an early business or even an early business idea. It's you probably are familiar with Kickstarter or Indiegogo, and I think that's a great way for any startup to not just raise money, but to build some brand awareness of whatever product or service they're trying to get on the market. It's also a nice way to test out that idea, like we were talking about earlier. So it takes a lot of work to run a campaign on Kickstarter or Indiegogo. There's usually a video you have to produce and you have to get out the word, but it's a nice sort of introduction to marketing for most entrepreneurs. And it's a great exercise in marketing. It also can help them raise money. That's almost secondary in my mind in terms of Kickstarter and Indiegogo. And then you mentioned Shark Tank earlier, which a lot of people are big fans of the show, and it's a great show. I will say that it's not really reflective of the experience of most small businesses. There are something like 30 million small businesses in the U.S. Only really a handful of all those businesses are the types of kind of high growth startups that would be appropriate for investment from angel investors or from venture capitalists. Most companies are not high growth startups. If you happen to be a high growth startup, if you're in an entrepreneurial hub, maybe you're in Silicon Valley or you're in Austin or in New York City, and you do think your company will grow large enough so that you might be acquired by another company or maybe you might go public yourself, then it would be appropriate to seek investment from angel investors or venture capital firms. But you usually, much like getting a loan from a bank or an SBA loan even, you need to have a bit of a track record. You need to have something that you can impress someone with. And that can be a product, a developed product or service that you can show someone, or some numbers that back what you're trying to do.
Yeah. Definitely know your numbers and know, track your growth, for example. Okay. So funding is definitely complex. Everything from angel to VC to, crowdsourcing. So let's now, because I love how we're going in stages. So now we talk about the idea, the strategy, the funding. The one of the biggest pieces is always about acquiring customers and getting the word out there.
Yeah.
What have you noticed with your experience? Because you've covered extensive businesses. Yeah. What's the best way to get the word?
Well, this is again where technology has been our friend, in that anyone starting a business today can use social media to grow their business, and that's something that was not available to startups, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago. Some of the social networks that are widely used now were not, were either in their infancy or maybe not even around yet. Social media has been a great equalizer in that you don't have to spend a fortune to build your brand and to get exposure. It's quite different than in times past, when you might have to spend a lot of money to buy a television commercial or a radio commercial or what have you. With social media, a lot of it is either free or far less expensive than traditional advertising. The one thing I will say about social media is that it's almost overwhelming. At any of the news organizations I've worked at, when I've interviewed entrepreneurs or I've gotten questions from entrepreneurs, a lot of them want to know, how do I handle social media? Because you've got Facebook, you've got Instagram, you've got Twitter, and there's seemingly new ones every day, and it's hard to figure out which one. Do you need to be on all of them? How do you manage this? I say to entrepreneurs that you definitely need to be on, if your customers are on social media, and chances are they are, then you need to be on social media too. So that's the first thing. And then what I recommend for people is to just pick one social network, just to make it, at least to start with, just to make it a little less overwhelming. And I recommend picking a social network that makes the most sense for your business. So, you know, if you have, if you're opening a restaurant and you serve beautiful food and all of that is eye candy, there's a lot of photos that are just gorgeous, then you might want to use something like Instagram, because that's what people use Instagram for. It's a very visual social network and they want to see those beautiful photos. If you are starting a business and you offer some sort of professional service, maybe you're a consultant and you have an expertise in a certain area and you work in certain industries, then LinkedIn would be probably a much better social network for you to spend some time on, because the people who go to LinkedIn are more professionally minded, and you know, that would just be a better medium. I think when you, in any event, whatever network you choose, it does take some time, some effort. If you do small campaigns, it takes some resources and some financial resources. So, you know, you want to, you do want to dedicate either your own time to it, or if you're in a position where you can have someone else dedicate time to it, that's great too. But it takes a while for any company to get to a point where they can have a full-time social media person. But but I do think it is really, these days, it's the best way to answer your original question. I think it's the best way to get the name out about your business. It really, it has, I think so many entrepreneurs in recent years have used it to grow their companies.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Then I'm curious to know what your thoughts are, and then I guess since social media is the best way, figuring out what their wants are and the needs are, you know, because it's a crowded place.
How do you
listen?
Yeah, so, you know, figuring out what your customers' wants and needs are, I think is a critical thing for any entrepreneur to do. You really need to know your customer. And of course, I'm not saying anything new. I think people have said that since the beginning of time. But it's almost more difficult these days for a lot of companies to know their customers, because so much business is done online. Think of all the different, you know, things that you buy online. You probably purchase products or services from any number of vendors. They've probably never met you in person. You've never met them in person. So, you know, it's a real challenge these days to know your customer as the leader of a business. So a couple suggestions I have for that, and I talk about it in my book, is to, you know, take that step back, and this is where, you know, you've already got your business, it's slowly growing, maybe you've got your product or service in the marketplace. Take some time to step back and to maybe spend a day in your customer's shoes and look at the world the way your customer sees it. So for instance, say you sell some sort of product, I can't think of anything else. Say you sell pens, you know, say you sell a really nice pen, you know, and you've got all these customers that are buying your pens, you know, spend a day in your customer's shoes. Look at why they're buying your pens. You know, there are a lot of other people who sell pens. How come they're not, you know, going to those competitors? You know, what is it about you that they like? Is it the color of your pens? Is it the price of your pens? Is it how your pens work? You know, what is it that makes you different than the competitors? So, you know, that's good information that you can use, especially if you want to develop more products. You know, you want to know why customers are choosing you. One thing that I think this is kind of a fun idea. This comes from the medical industry, actually, but when interns at hospitals are training to be doctors, sometimes they will they will do this thing where they pretend to be a patient for a day, so they understand what the whole process is like to be admitted into the hospital, you know, to check in and to meet with doctors, and you know, they get a whole sense from the patient's perspective of what it's like. And that's a great tip for anyone who needs to either reconnect with customers or to really understand their customer base, is to, you know, pretend to be your customer for the day, you know, kind of staple yourself to the order, your customer's order, and see how it goes through your business. You know, if there are people in customer service that you need to talk to those people. Just get a real sense of what the customer is seeing and hearing and interacting with your company. And that is hugely informative in terms of understanding your customer and understanding how you need to serve them, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a good point on, you know, the point of pretending to be your customer. Yeah.
Right. And it's, you know, this is, I feel like as I say these things, this isn't rocket science.
No, it's not. Yeah, but it's we don't do it.
Right. I mean, these are kind of common sense things, but people, especially when they're in the thick of it, they forget to do these things. So this is, you know, if anything, what I hope to do in my book is to just have there be a lot of reminders in there for what people should be doing on a regular basis as they're starting and growing their business.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That's good. Oh, we're almost getting ready to wrap up here. So, the last few points I want to talk about, I'll start off with becoming the leader, right? I think our world needs a lot of leaders. This podcast was created because I want to help develop the next set of global leaders. And I guess it's, you know, in your last two chapters, you talk about becoming an exceptional leader.
Yeah.
And then you talk about going global. So that's a combination right there. So since I talk about global leaders, can you talk about what it's like to be an exceptional leader and then what that means to go global?
Oh, of course. Yeah. And I'll try to do it succinctly. So, you know, with exceptional leadership, I think the good news is that you can learn leadership skills. You don't have to be born a leader. And I think that's good news for people who maybe have that imposter syndrome that you were talking about before. There are some people who don't feel like they have that innate ability to lead. Well, the good news is you don't have to have been born with it. You can learn and develop and practice these skills. And when I was looking at the super successful entrepreneurs and trying to find what made them really effective leaders, I tried to pinpoint a number of things. And there were kind of like five areas I pinpointed, basically. And that is that to be an exceptional leader, you basically need to do the following. You need to be decisive. And I listed that as the first one because, you know, when you're running the business, you're the one who makes all the decisions. No one is going to make them for you. So you really need to be decisive. You need to be able to communicate effectively. And again, that's so important in terms of communicating, say, what your workplace culture is to your employees, or communicating what your product or service is to your customers. You really need to be able to be a good communicator. And if you feel that you're not, you can learn. There are any number of courses out there. There's all sorts of people who can teach you public speaking skills. There's any number of resources for that. So don't feel like, you know, if you don't have it, you're done. You can definitely learn those things. Another thing that we see is that really great leaders behave generously. And that's something that I think is an important concept and something that we're maybe identifying more of that in more recent years. And that is, you know, that and being self-aware, which is another trait that we think of exceptional leaders have. Both of those sort of speak to emotional intelligence. And that is, it's almost an intangible, but it's a certain finesse you have as a leader that you're very relatable, you can relate to your employees, you're emotionally sensitive. And I think that is, that's really critical these days, especially if you're employing millennials and Gen Z. There's an expectation that you're going to have that emotional intelligence. So if you don't have those innate skills, you can beef up on them. Yeah. And then lastly, we see that leaders have, they sort of exude charisma. And that's and I see that you, Tayo, have that in spades. You know, you're very good at exuding charisma. And in one of the great ways to exude charisma is to make other people feel special. And you certainly did that as you introduced me, and throughout this whole interview, as you've asked me questions, I can tell that you have tried to ask questions that are good for my, area of expertise, and you've been very sensitive to that. So you definitely are a good example of someone who exudes charisma.
Thanks so much.
Of course. So those are sort of the leadership traits that I identified, and I have that in the book. And, those are things that we see the successful entrepreneurs having, all of those.
Yeah, no, this is so good. I meant it when I said this. A lot of people in the audience, while in the same position, I built the podcast to inspire people to tap into their inner talents, their inner skills, so that they can go on and change the world. And my mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. That's the foundation of everything that I've done. And when I came across your book, going from startup idea to an empire, something that I really resonated with, because I feel like we're in an age where, it's not the same as my parents' generation, where you sort of had to have this job for 50 years or so. So that idea and that mindset is something that, I feel like your book gives people. So, where can people find this?
Oh, so you can go to Amazon.com. Which I mentioned earlier, as a good example of a successful company. But yeah, you can certainly buy the book at Amazon.com, and it's called Start a Successful Business. It's published through Inc. Magazine, so you can go to Inc. Magazine's website, Inc.com. There's links to it there, and there's a lot of great articles and pieces of advice on Inc.com. And then you could go to my personal website as well, which is my name, and it's ColleenDeBase.com.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll make sure I put all this in the show notes. And really, ladies and gentlemen, nomads, make sure you get this book. It's really, really packed with lots of advice. And read our articles. Her articles are on Inc.com. And you just type in Colleen DeBase, and you're going to see a lot of things that she's written about. As a final question, it's the mission statement. My mission statement is use your difference to make a difference, as I said earlier. How do you use your difference to make a difference?
Well, I think that's a good question. I haven't really thought about it. But I think as a journalist, the power I have is the ability to shine a spotlight on people who deserve that spotlight shown on them. And I love doing that. I love being able to tell the stories of entrepreneurs. I love interviewing entrepreneurs and finding out all of the challenges they went through and all the hurdles to get their business up and running. And, these are people who are creating products and services that we love, that are creating jobs in their communities, that are really performing a really important service to their own local communities, and then nationally they're contributing to the economy by running their own businesses. And it's not an easy thing to run your own business, and as a journalist I love being able to give people the attention they deserve. That makes me very happy. And in recent years I've been focusing on female entrepreneurs, and I've been looking at a lot of women who are running socially conscious companies. So, not only are they, creating companies that are making great products or services and creating jobs, but they also have some sort of mission, whether that's, helping the environment, or, they're doing some social good on top of all of the rest. And I give people like that so much credit, and sometimes they don't get the media attention they deserve. So what I try to do as a journalist is to give them that attention.
Well, no, you do a good job with that. And we'll definitely make sure we get that in the show notes. But thank you so much. I think being a business person in today's world is one of the best ways to solve problems. So I'm really humbled that you spent this last 45 minutes with us.
Oh, well, it was my pleasure. I am very honored that you asked me to be on this podcast.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, ladies and gentlemen, till next time, use your difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.